from the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean. Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, how to pray for a financial miracle. Stand by for that. Here's what's happening. Almost 30 years ago, the world's attention was fixed on Chernobyl, the nuclear power plant in the Ukraine that exploded into one of the world's worst disasters. The world has moved on a bit since 1986, but at Chernobyl, one thing has not changed very much. Listen to this. The dead trees, plants, and leaves at the contaminated site don't decay at nearly the same rate as plants elsewhere, according to the researchers. And they're trying to figure out, how can this be? The dead trees, plants, and leaves at that contaminated site do not decay at the rate that plants do elsewhere. In Detroit, a customer with a handgun stopped a shoplifting suspect from slashing a security officer with a contaminated needle and a syringe outside of a Home Depot store in Roseville, Michigan. The 26-year-old man was arrested a short time later. There's another perfect example where a concealed weapon saved the day. A French satellite scanning the Indian Ocean for remnants of a missing jetliner found a possible plane debris field containing 122 objects. Meanwhile, the air and sea search for the missing Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 resumed in the southern Indian Ocean a day after fresh satellite images reveal this possible debris field. Six military aircraft, five civilian aircraft, five ships taking part. However, they say weather in the search area expected to get bad again. The flight disappeared March 8th, 239 people on board. Let's check in with Howard Bloom. Howard, I have a question for you on this situation. And let me ask you this specifically. People have been getting all kinds of stories since March 8th, all kinds of stories. How much more can they take?
Well, people are about to get tired of it. It's been called the biggest missing aircraft mystery since Amelia Earhart. There is a blunt psychological fact, and it goes back to playing peekaboo when you're a kid. Humans are oriented towards solving mysteries about things that disappear, things they cannot see. And this is the biggest with radar all over the world, with satellites, with roughly 4,000 satellites above our heads all of the time. This is the biggest one. But there is, and we've had every conceivable kind of supposition about what's going on. The Iranians know exactly what happened. Our planes have been built, especially Boeing planes have been built ever since 9/11, say the Iranians. So they have all kinds of redundant systems that will fly a plane, even if it's taken over by terrorists, back to some place the CIA wants it to fly. So clearly the CIA knows exactly where this plane is and has taken it for its own nefarious reasons. And Rolls-Royce is in touch with the engines and knows exactly where they are. That's the Iranian interpretation. There is the political interpretation. The pilot is a fan of Anwar Ibrahim, a politician in Indonesia who's been accused of sodomy unrightly in order to get him out of the way.
That's
and
right.
Kept in jail for a lot of time. And since the pilot is angry about the fact that Anwar Ibrahim was put or was threatened with jail just a few hours before the flight took off, he's getting his revenge. But the real solution seems to have come from, and this is just now, seems to have come from the Daily Mail in England. The pilot was having an affair. The pilot's wife had announced that she was moving out on him. This is according to another pilot who was one of the best friends of the pilot.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that he had two women, he was extremely upset that he was losing his wife and his kids. So he took the flight up to an altitude of 44,000 feet, which is above where these Boeings are supposed to fly. That produces a lack of oxygen, hypoxia. And there's not enough oxygen in the oxygen mask to cover this. He was apparently at that altitude for 22 minutes. That would have killed that would have killed or knocked out all of the passengers, all of the people in the cockpit, and that's why the plane flew an additional 4,000 miles to get to the South Indian Ocean and settle somewhere west of Perth with 120 pieces found by Japanese, by French, and by South Korean satellites.
Suicide mission.
Suicide mission, and it makes so much sense because we've all seen people go through that kind of thing.
Yeah. Howard, thank you so much for that. And that's a perspective that I think we really need to look at right now. The European Space Agency has published the long list of 8 sites it is considering as a destination for its ExoMars rover. The vehicle will be put on the surface of the Red Planet in January of 2019 to search for evidence of past or present life. It should operate for at least 7 months. We'll carry a drill to probe up to 2 meters underground. Cydonia was not picked as the site. Astronomers have found a new dwarf planet far beyond Pluto's orbit, suggesting that this distant realm contains millions of undisclosed objects, including perhaps a world larger than Earth. Could it be Planet X? Well, this one is about the size of Sedna. And again, they're finding more and more of these objects out there, and they're pretty excited about all of that. Twitter shares fell almost 25%, wiping out about $10 billion in market value after the company reported a sharp slowdown in user growth. The stock, which debuted at $26 a share in November, hit a low of $50 in early trading. The shares hit a peak of $74 in December as investors bet then that the social media platform would become another Facebook. Lauren Weinstein, are we seeing the end of some of these dot-coms, Lauren?
I don't think so, not at this point. And Twitter in particular, you know, is in a kind of special situation because they're kind of morphing between different models right now. It's not quite clear what they really want to do in the long run. Are they going to be mostly oriented toward individuals who are tweeting messages to themselves? Will they turn mostly into a political platform? I mean, they're actually responsible for people being able to communicate in emergency situations and in political uprisings. They've turned into the main communication platform for that. Or will they become more oriented toward media relationships with television programs and series and things like that? It's become very popular for people to live tweet during programs, which adds even on movies, that's being frequently done now.
Yeah.
And I don't think it is really settled yet. And I suspect, as usual, when you look at the stock market and technology stocks, there's a certain class of investor who is very sensitive to almost everything that occurs in the news. And they start to dump stock or they start to buy stock based on rather thin evidence. So I don't think this really says much for the long term. Any kind of stock like this, you're going to see short-term variations. Sometimes they can appear dramatic, but it's really the long term you want to pay attention to.
All right, well, thanks so much. Well, the whack job at North Korea is doing it again. We've got a story at coasttocoastam.com in the news. Male university students in North Korea are now required to get the same haircut as their leader, Kim Jong-un. The state-sanctioned guideline was introduced at the Capitol 2 weeks ago. It is now being rolled out across the country. People have expressed reservations about getting his look. He's insane. Go take a look at his haircut. We got a picture of it in the news at coasttocoastam.com. It's worse than any haircut I've ever seen. And he's forcing now all the male university students there to get the same kind of haircut as him. And here's a company is aiming to take advantage of the celebrity worship culture by planning to feed fanatics their favorite celebrities. Hundreds of people are petitioning celebrities to donate tissue samples to BiteLabs.org, a company that says it will produce salami from celebrity tissue samples for human consumption. Does it get any stranger than that? Anyway, John Hoag will be joining us in a moment. Now, John was just with me a couple weeks ago, but there's a reason he wants to come back. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. John Hoag, of course, writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy. He's very prophetic in his own. A number of his books are out there, Special Predictions, Nostradamus and the Antichrist. And as I mentioned, John was just with me several weeks ago, but there are some events unfolding and he needs to be on now. John, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, and especially thanks again for having me on that so soon since the 5th of February when I was on last.
What did you see? What have you seen that wants to necessitate this quick comeback?
Well, this is the first time in 20 years of being on Coast to Coast AM that I've felt the need to ring an alarm bell, prophetically speaking, early enough so that if enough people are alert to the danger, we can avoid one of two futures that have always remained the two key, most important, dangerous futures for the human race in our lifetime, that our unconsciousness and denial of, collectively, of the danger is our worst enemy. Literally, it becomes the most, our unconsciousness about these things becomes the greatest evil, the greatest antichrist in our lives. And that, the one that I've talked about a lot on the show is, of course, climate change. Whether you believe the world is going to get colder or warmer, one thing is definitely happening. The Earth's climate is going out of control, and it's going out of control in a creeping crisis that is overtaking us slowly. The other thing that I've been warning about for almost 30 years, I started writing about this in articles, and I published it in my first book 25 books ago in 1987. The second one is that the Third World War is not behind us. The threat of thermonuclear annihilation in one terrible night is not behind us.
Not at all.
It is ahead of us. And that was clearly foreseen by Nostradamus and other prophets like Stormberger, Pastor Bartholomaeus of the 17th century, St. Odile, and others have a collective vision, very clear vision, from people who have a track record numbering and dating and describing our world wars. And they all of them see three world wars. Two of them have already passed. Another happens when Russia and America try to become friends, but the friendship is undermined, Nostradamus says, by a barbare source. Now, barbare, one has to study Nostradamus, understanding all the nuances of 16th century French and the way Nostradamus applied them as codes to his prophecies. I mean, the vast majority of writers who write on Nostradamus don't even study 16th century French, so they're clueless about a lot of what he's really doing, I contend. Now, barbari is Barbary, is one possible translation, which is the ancient name of Libya, North Africa. The Barbary pirates were a people who were raiding Christendom like terrorists from Islam raid and do things today. So it is one of Nostradamus' ways to talk about a 16th century metaphor applied to us. Modern jihadists, he calls barbari, just like the Barbary corsairs of old. But there's always layers in Nostradamus' codes. The other layer, and one has to think in French, not in English, or as most I get letters every day from people saying, oh, it means this, some English phrase. He didn't think in English. He thought in Latin, French, Italian, mainly French, 16th century French. The Barbary is but most likely also meaning from the Arab, Darab. Darab, spelled in the French spelling, D apostrophe A-R-A-B-E, is a classic anagram word change for barbari. So an Arab source, i.e. the Middle East, some Arab source, an Arab country, an Arab leader perhaps, is the trigger for a unexpected breakdown of friendly relationships between two kings who are called the Brothers of the North in Nostradamus' prophecies. He uses the word aquilon, which is is for Aquila, the eagle constellation is their symbol. So they have stars and eagles in their symbols. Now, up through the Cold War, we were through from 1948 with the Berlin blockade all the way to officially ending in 1989, which, by the way, there's a prophecy of Nostradamus dated 89, which describes the end, and that the bloody one, which would be Gorbachev with his bloody birthmark, it was the number of weapons are reported to him in the beginning of the dismantling of missiles.
Right.
And it said America would be at its highest power, which it was. It won the Cold War. And so it's century two, quatrain 89, and it is a fact that Gorbachev and H.W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, that is, the older Bush president, had officially declared the Cold War over in December of 1989. So February 1989 was when the Soviet forces left Afghanistan after occupying it for 10 years in the war. So it's dated. So there's something very clear and important about this string of prophecies which deal with this, these Eagle Kings of the North, which means America and Russia. Now, during the Cold War, you couldn't say this was about anything going on in the Cold War because one of the two was not using an eagle as its symbol. The Soviets had the hammer and sickle. When they lost that and the red flag, they went back in 1992 to the double-headed eagle symbol as the state totem of Russia. So the brothers of the North, who are Aquilon, are talking about times after 1992. And so he's talking about tomorrow, not the past. Now, the thing that's also common in these prophecies is that people walk through the first, like Sternberger and Nostradamus both dated. Sternberger was a German cowherd who had these visions. We talked about him back on February 5th. That he basically predicted that when a train track, an iron horse road would be made between his forest and these two villages, that Germany would go to war, the whole world would go to a war that lasts 2 times 2 years, and that they would have these great fortresses that crawled on the ground, they would have these weapons from the sky, planes, and they would have weapons on the earth, mines. And then he goes on to talk about how the next war would happen 20 to 30 years later.
And he was adamant, by the way, about a third world war.
Yes, he was he was saying 20 or 30 years later. It's interesting because he says 20, which is exactly how many years it was between World War I and II for the Second World War. But he adds another 10 years and actually dates the Cold War's beginning as 30 years later. So they're both there. But then he talks about the third being a war that where people walk with their eyes wide open into this catastrophe, but more than the other two. And this is ironic talking about this because this is a man who predicted World War One to the day, August 1st, because that's when that train track was opened. The first day of World War One, that's when that train track was opened and built for business. And so here we are 100 years later in the 100th anniversary of 1914. We are, even in predictions for 2014, which is currently available at Kindle, Kobo, and Nook, e-tablets, I was talking in that book about, are we about to see the history's water break again? Are we about to see, I even talked about a partition of Ukraine and other states moving back into the Russian sphere of influence? That's in the book. And those were written last year.
Before any of this happened.
Yeah, and then so now I'm seeing the kind of denial and infantile immaturity towards geopolitical issues where people have wish-fulfilling desires, just like the kings and queens and presidents of 1914, who, like even today, President Obama in Europe basically tried to say how all the ways this isn't the Cold War. And he sounds just like any leader from 1914 who is looking back at the Napoleonic Wars and the Franco-Prussian War to try to understand what a modern war would be like that no one had yet fought or understood.
True.
And so he is, the thing is, if our Western leaders are going to look at what's happening now as a resumption of a war that's past over 20 years, they are missing being able to see what's ahead of them in a new kind of struggle even though similar participants are involved, Europe and the West versus China and Russia, it is different.
Hold on, John. We're coming back for more with you because there's still another prophet as well, in addition to Stormberger, who talks about a third world war. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. We've got John Hoag for a few hours here as we talk about prophecy, his concerns of a third world war. John, in addition to Stormberger, there was another prophet who talked about a third world war?
Yes, there were several. And what I can do just briefly is kind of take you all through a walk through the prophecies of Nostradamus, Stormberger, and Pastor Bartholomaeus, who was in the 17th century, and also St. Odile, who was also, I believe, a 16th century prophet. She goes way farther back, at 720 AD, where she made predictions about a war that would be waged where people would hurl stars out of the sky down on cities. A thermonuclear war is a metaphor for basically a fusion bomb is a sun being created by man on the planet. And the power of fusion be used as a weapon. She called it stars being thrown down on our cities. And so just in a walkthrough quickly through some of these prophecies, we'll start with Nostradamus as the foundation and build from there. It says, one day the two great leaders will become friends. Their great power will be seen to increase. The new land, which is America, will be at the height of its power. And that was part of the prophecy that was dated 89 from Quatrain 89, Century 2. He talks about how then there shall be two lords in number. You see, word links are how you link through Nostradamus' prophecies. He'll use the same phrase again. If you tie these quatrains together, but they're scattered, all 1,500 or so, are scattered through his almanacs and his main work of prophecy. If you tie them together by their familiar word games and word placings, they actually piece together a puzzle. So we had two great leaders will be friends. There shall be two lords in number. That's a similar phrase. The victorious in the north against the eastern ones. The northern ones are against the east.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There shall be a great noise and warlike tumult that the east shall quake with fear for these two brothers of the north who are not yet brothers. They will be victorious against the easterners. Now, he talks about triumvirate of piracy, which describes similar to the biblical prophecies that deals with Mesopotamia, he calls them, Iraq, Persia, and the great Mongol, which would be China. These are the easterners in his version of that rather apocalyptic scripture. And he says the main core of the issue, which is burning today in what is going on with the resumption of a Cold War status, great disagreement and discord in order to obtain land. I mean, we have in the West leaders who even today make it very clear that they think their elitist views of international law, which they can break whenever they feel they need to, like in Iraq, but suddenly it can't be broken if Putin does the same thing in Crimea. They look at the world as if it is no longer a 19th century world. Even Obama today said, we're not living in the 19th century. We shouldn't bring it back.
Yeah.
What he's talking about is something that is actually quite alive and well in the world and has not changed. And that is that geography and resources, more now than even in the 19th century, now that we're so overpopulated and needing so many products and materials for our high energy societies and consumerism, the pressures of the 19th century have come back tenfold. And if the president of the United States doesn't understand this, and Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, does,
he gets it.
Now, I am not. Make it clear so you don't waste time emailing me about this, everybody. I am not a friend or supporter of the totalitarian autocrat in Russia. But in prophecy, I have to look beyond my own national biases and take stock of realities. Whatever Putin is politically, He is a far more rational thinker at the moment, far more grounded in the realities of geographical and resource-based geopolitics than the leaders of Europe and the President of the United States.
And extremely methodical.
He's the other thing, too, that you will not hear in the American press very much, if that's your sole source of information over the last 20 years, is there has been an encroachment of what is called the near abroad, which is Russia's kind of red line, the areas which are its local neighboring countries, which it feels like it has to have influence in as its sphere of influence, just like Western Europe feels that they don't want Russia in their sphere of influence. You know, people do this. This is geographical. No matter what Obama thinks about 19th century, it is geographical issues, spheres of influence economically and resource-wise. So ever since the fall of the Soviet Union, NATO has been encroaching and taking bites off of the former Soviet Union. All the way up through the Baltic states, where Putin very clearly said, if you go after the Ukraine, or if you go after the Caucasus, that's our red line. We want to tell you up front, don't do that. And if you put missiles in Poland that you say are pointed at the Middle East for any missile that might strike Europe, but they're pointed at Moscow, and this was back in 2008, Vladimir Putin rightfully sees a rat in this kind of double talk and says, you guys are trying to pressure us. You are trying to do the same neoconservative stuff you did with Iraq and with Libya. Any country that doesn't follow your line of thinking, any country that's a threat to the petrodollar, because Russia is the biggest exporter of oil.
It's a squeeze play.
It's a squeeze play of neoconservatism, which has been trying to find a new Cold War to fight. They tried it with the war on terror. It didn't work. So now they're going back to Plan B. Corporate thinking, when they take a risk, they always go back. The military-industrial complex is no different. Goes back to a formula that worked in the past. So there is a very strong push that I see going on, which I've written in several books about, in my book, Nostradamus, The War with Iran. In fact, Iran is, and Syria are very much a part of this problem.
But unlike, though, a weak Afghanistan and Iraq, Russia can fight back.
Yes, and Russia has said very clear, one thing you can't fault Putin for, when he says a red line is crossed, if you cross it, you're going to be consequences with it. He doesn't back off, like the red line that was crossed in Syria over chemical weapons. The West crossed the red line with Ukraine, placing in Kiev, and you will not hear or see the footage of this much in the West. It's amazing to see the propaganda that is going on, much more so in the West than in Putin's Russia, which there's propaganda there too. But, you know, one of the things I've done over 30 years is I look at every news source, and I know they're going to have their worldview filtered through the world through. They're going to see not the beam in their own eye, but the splinter in the other. And the art of doing this is to take note of the biases of the Russians, the West, and everybody, and then find, usually they're very good at seeing what's wrong in the other, but not themselves. I would have to say right now that the Russian press is actually seeing more of what's really going on with us than we are seeing in them. Yeah. And the thing that is shocking is the people that we are supporting, once again, like we've done in so many other civil wars or potential partitions since Vietnam, we are supporting fascist regimes, fascist coup d'etats that we call the freedom fighters, because I mean the Svoboda, which used to be called the Ukrainian Socialist Party, National Socialist Party, the man who's running for president, who will probably become the next president, is head of Right Sector, which is a virulent anti-Semitic, anti-Russian nationalist party, Western Ukrainian party. I have pictures on my website, as well as the details on my website, can show these nice people that Senator McCain was shaking hands and schmoozing with are the same people doing Nazi salutes and walking around like neo-Nazis.
Jeez.
And they also, if you look at these posters of these people, there is one man, for instance, that you'll see lots in the posters on TV. You'll see this black and white shot of this fellow. And he is a basically the George Washington of Svoboda, the Ukraine National Socialist Party. His name is Stefan Bandera, And he worked and fought side by side with the SS and the Gestapo and a lot of his people.
Nice.
A lot of his people actually were employed in the death camps of Auschwitz and Majdak, and he is their George Washington. These are the people that have taken over Kiev. Is it any wonder that the Russians on the eastern half of Ukraine are feeling like they don't want to be in Ukraine anymore? And Crimea, which was always a Russian province, they did actually vote to join back into Russia. And I have saw this split, this partition coming last year, and wrote about it in predictions for 2014.
But do you think, John, that this area, this small area, could be the basis for another third war?
No, it's a mindset. Just like 1914, we're back to in 2014 to the same problem. It's not so much about, I mean, it is about empire and property and resources, but the great error is the self-deception of our leaders and our people being propagated to think something else is happening that isn't happening. Like I said, with open eyes, they shall walk into these great catastrophes. All St. O'Dial saying the same thing. Bartholomeus, Nostradamus saying the same thing, that we literally walk like they did in 1914, blithely into the trains with flowers in their guns, going off to this war that ended Christmas, and it ended up being the war that basically gave birth to the rather neurotic and modern and uncertain modern times. And now, 100 years later, we're about to go through another upset, another upheaval by the same thing not learned yet by our leaders who think that the Cold War is behind them and that this isn't a Cold War, and they're doing everything to actually divide the world again into Eastern and Western blocks. And only this time now it's not taking your former CIA operative, Saddam Hussein, who went rogue, and overthrowing his place. It is now a situation where there really are weapons of mass destruction held by the United States and the Federation of Russia, that if some misstep happens from this one escalation of misunderstanding after another, you could unleash 7,800 atomic weapons from Russia and 6,500 atomic weapons from America, and probably a much greater payload of devastation than we could ever imagine in our worst nightmares during the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. And the thing is that this is that if the prophecies of Nostradamus describe that we could, if when the Cold War actually begins, we have to like see when it truly starts. When it starts, it either hits a nuclear war in 3 years and 7 months after that,
Jesus,
or 13 years. So those are the two timelines. And what made me sound the alarm is, for the first time in 30 years as a prophecy scholar, I'm seeing that we are really coming close now, perhaps as soon as the Grand Cross, astrologically, that's going to happen on the 20th of April. The Cold War could officially begin on that day, which is ironically not only this year Easter, but it's also Hitler's birthday, 20th of April.
Symbolism everywhere, John. My gosh.
Very much so. And so we are now entering a situation where this Grand Cross, it's complicated astrologically, but I will just say in layman's terms, it's about leadership. It's about when planets all align into a grand cross, four squares, which is a negative aspect. This is always the friction point where all our weaknesses of mind and character create disasters for us. And it's following under planets under cardinal signs, which means cardinal meaning rulers. It's about leadership going astray, going very, very astray. And so we could have our first crisis, which could actually be the occupation of the Donets and some other parts of eastern Ukraine, most likely because the people do what they did in Crimea. I predicted that if Crimea gets its referendum, you're going to start seeing a whole number of former Soviet republics and counties and areas want to join back to the motherland, which if they have a very sizable, if not a majority, of ethnic Russians. And although Putin has said he does not want to invade, and frankly, he doesn't need to. He can just let time and the naivety of the West realize that half of Ukraine does not want their fascist government in Kiev, and they've probably lost the southeastern portion of Ukraine to Russia, which will then there's the idea of Moldova and Odessa, which is also a high population of Russians. They will also come over. Ukraine will have lost all of its access to the Black Sea, and Putin will have a transport connection to Crimea, which is the prize, strategically as well. He's thinking strategically. Now, that's why he's being fainted with this faint attack on Ukraine, because he has had some success in actually stopping a full-scale war that Obama wanted to rush into with Syria last August into September. He took up the idea of the chemical weapons being dismantled for the Syrian regime that is an ally. He's also an ally to the Iranians. So this is where we get into, we're really, this is all about the Middle East again, even though everybody's looking at Ukraine. And again, the Arab source is the cause of the breakup of the friendship. And when that really breaks up, 3 years and 7 months or 13 years after that, you have Nostradamus' prophecies of Armageddon, which are probably his most scary prophecies.
Which also echo Stromberger's, right?
Yes. I mean, I'll now go back to reading some of them.
And he was just a cowherder, wasn't he?
He was just an illiterate cowherder before he died in the 1820s. He made most of his predictions in the later 1800s, 18th century, so 1790s, 1780s. And then they were finally written down before he died around 1820. So even then, he was well over a century before he could date accurately World War I and II. So he starts and says, and after the Second Great War, World War II, between the nations will come a third universal conflagration, which will determine everything. There will be entirely new weapons. In one day, more men will die than in all previous wars combined. Battles will be fought with artificial weapons. Gigantic catastrophes will occur. And now Pastor Bartholomaeus takes up the same vision several hundred years back in 1642. He says, heaven and hell will confront each other in this struggle. Old states will perish, and light and darkness will be pitted against each other with swords. But it will be swords of a different fashion. He's trying to describe the swords that cut up the skies. Well, a missile to a man from the 17th century might look like a flying sword.
That's right.
With these swords, it will be possible to cut up the skies and split the earth. You know that nuclear detonations destroy the ozone layer. So he's talking about the ozone layer and is also splitting the earth. The great lament will come over all mankind, and only a small batch will survive the tempest, the pestilence, and the horror. Neither of the two adversaries will conquer nor be vanquished. Both mighty ones, Russia and America perhaps, will lie on the ground, and a new mankind will come into existence. Now, St. Odile says, and she's saying this from even farther back, 720 AD, a horrible warrior will unleash it, this war, and his enemies will call him Antichrist.
Wow.
All nations of the earth will fight each other in this war. The fighters will rise up into the heavens and take the stars and throw them on the cities.
Hold on, John. Let's get right back into this, and we'll take some calls next hour with you.